I wonder who it is that inspires you. In fact, yeah, we'll ask. You know, who is your role model? Who inspires you? Any takers? That was a question. And generally, in British culture, when somebody asks a question, a response is good. Daniel, you had a hand up? I guess go a bit closer. Say it louder, brother. Stanley Clark. Bassist, okay? Of course he is. Yep, all right. Stanley Clark. Anybody else? Role models. People that inspire you. Your grandmother. What was her name? May. Okay, lovely. Thank you. Anyone else? Selwyn Hughes, all right, yeah. Wilberforce, yeah, good, great abolitionist, political leader, yeah. Anyone else? Take one more. Gareth, yeah, all right, yeah. I'll pay you later, Nick, all right. But, I don't know who it is that inspires you. It might be a great sporting hero. I looked through on Wikipedia, or actually rather I Googled great Derby County sporting players, and it came up with no results. It might be a great sporting hero. It could be a political leader. I've got both on there just to be nice and balanced, all right? Power to the people. It could be somebody who's a figurehead or has remained faithful in their role and devoted to others. It could be somebody in ages past. Wilberforce was mentioned, who stood against oppression or led a revolutionary cause. Could be a musician or a great actor, whatever it might be. I don't know who are the people that you look up to. Now, I wouldn't go as far to say these people are my heroes. If I was looking for a hero, they'd be wearing black and white stripes. But I'm really impressed by two people and their leadership of massive organisations at the minute. All right, I'm a great fan of Justin Welby, the current Archbishop, and I love, in a nice way, I love Pope Francis as well. And they're both inspirational people. And certainly in the job that I do, it's so refreshing to see people in a high position within the life of the church engaging with tough subjects and their desire to communicate the essence of Christian faith in plain and simple ways. They are role models for somebody like me. I met Justin Welby once. He's a lovely man. Lovely man. I haven't yet met the Pope, but my time will come. And, but we've all got role models, haven't we? We've all got people that we look up to, people that are a pattern for us, people that inspire us, people that we want even to be like. And the community that St. Paul is writing to in our reading are no different. They're just like us. They're a group of Christians in northern Greece in the first century, and they're based in the town or city of Thessalonica. And if you're wondering, that's why the letter is called Thessalonians. He's writing to that community. And Paul, who wrote most of the New Testament, has become something of a role model for them. He founded their church, their Christian community, and there's more about that in Acts chapter 16 and 17. And when he did so, he set before them an example that they could follow or imitate or even copy. He showed faith and conduct that what he wanted to inspire them with. So not only does Paul teach them the knowledge, the facts of what they need to know to grow up in Christian faith, he also shows the Thessalonians, by how he lives, what it is like when somebody lives under the lordship of Jesus, when somebody takes on the values of Jesus and implements them in every aspect of their lives. And the Thessalonians take note. In another one of Paul's letters, to a church in Corinth, writing called the Corinthians, he encouraged them to imitate me, Paul, as I imitate Christ. In other words, follow my example as I follow Jesus' example. Now, I've discovered we've got a Thanksgiving this morning, so we've got a focus on a young family and a young child and a bit of a focus on parenting. For those that don't know me, I've got two children of my own, a seven-year-old who's going on seven, and a three-year-old who's going on 14 at the minute, okay? And they're lovely, but I've discovered, to my detriment, I have to say, that actually, whether I like it or not, they imitate me. Now, I've got a feeling I may have told you this before, so if you've heard it before, please forgive me. I might have tried it on my smaller church because it was a less of a risk. But I, you know, I'm not the most patient of people when I drive. I need to be, you know, I've just downloaded the Aviva Drive app to test how good my driving is. Now, I don't really need it in some ways because I know my driving is perfect. It's all the other people on the road that cause the problems. But I am not a patient driver. And, you know, obviously I'm a clergyman, so I would never swear in the car, ever. But I, much. But I have been known on one isolated occasion, I'm sure, when I was particularly under pressure, and it must have been late at night and at the end of a term near Christmas, it must have been, where apparently I appear to have got very frustrated with a driver of the opposite gender to mine, and apparently I, as I drove round and past her, uttered something like, "You dozy mare." All right? I know. We'll have to delete that from the podcast because we can't want churches listening to me and looking for a new minister to hear anything like that. All right? And I had no recollection of this event whatsoever. And this happened about a year ago until I was just driving along the road and somebody could have cut me up. And I think must have gone, "Oh dear." And my little daughter, who would have been two at that stage, just from the back of the car went, "Dozy mare." I remember, like they were two balls of fire, my beloved wife's eyes looking at me from the passenger seat. Okay? Whether we like it or not, children particularly imitate the role models that they see in front of them. We all know that. It's not even just children. We all do it. Now, to be clear, I do want my children to replicate some of the things that I do and some of the values that I stand for, but also I'm cautious about them watching my life too closely, lest they replicate what I'm really like. And to Joe and Cheese particularly, or to Joe, because I think Cheese is changing Iris at the minute, as Iris grows up, she will be looking to you as role models. And she will be looking to you to model great values and ethics. And in fact, in the promises we made a few minutes ago, you made a promise that she might understand from you the way of godly and right living. And so make sure you, and in fact any of the rest of us that are privileged enough to be parents or carers or, you know, have a primary or a significant input into the lives of children, that the model and example that we set for them is one that we'd be happy for them to replicate. But of course, this is broader, isn't it, than simply parenting. We want, actually, in ourselves to be good examples and good role models to others. Somebody said once of Christians living their life and trying to share their faith, that actually, of every 100 people, one might read the Bible, but 99 would read the Christian. Out of every 100 people, one might read the Bible, and 99 would read the Christian. So if Paul says to the Corinthians, "Follow me as I follow Christ," how many of us would be comfortable adopting that position ourselves? In essence, saying to somebody, "If you just watch how I live my life, you'll know exactly what it means to follow Jesus." How many of us would be comfortable saying that ourselves? Watch your life and your conduct closely then. Because not in some weird Big Brother way, but other people are watching you. They're watching us. Be a good role model as individuals. Secondly, the church should be a great example to community. Often it's not, but it should be. Paul wants to encourage the Thessalonians as a group, and he starts off this passage by thanking God for them. And he thanks God for their shared life together and how they interact with one another. He rejoices in the progress they are making as a community and how they are growing in their faith. Paul celebrates what he wants to reproduce. It's a good lesson for leadership. So as the Thessalonians are praised for their conduct, so they're spurred on to even more. Okay, that's what he wants. We'll do more of it. And what is it particularly then that Paul praises or gives thanks for? Well, firstly, they live out their faith. They express their faith in action. The Thessalonians are doing a good job because they're fleshing out what they believe with actions, what they do. Paul doesn't celebrate them, notice, for having purity of doctrine or having everything understood and sewn up in terms of belief, but he points out and recognizes how they've expressed their faith real in action. And so if we want to be a church that's an example to others, be sure then that we are expressing our faith in love. Be sure that we're serving people as though they are made in the image of God. So the Samaritan's purse is a great example of that. Not just about what we believe and getting kind of every sort of I dotted and T crossed in terms of right doctrine and belief. It's also about what we do with that and how we demonstrate that and how we live that and show it to other people. Ensure then that we're forgiving each other, encouraging one another. Make sure that people don't just hear that we think we're doing things better than other people, but that they see in us a humility and a compassion that is mirrored in the life of the Lord Jesus. It's important. It's important. Secondly, Paul says they're open to the gospel. They're going through great trials, and Paul commends them. Even in that suffering, they were willing to listen to him and respond to the message he preached. That he thanks God because they turn away from idols, things that were special to them, but incompatible to a life lived for Jesus. They were willing to make tough choices for the right reasons. And folks, for us as a church, the next 6 weeks are going to be a tough time. There's some wonderful things happening, like you will probably have appointed your new minister back to a proper one at last. But mainly over the next 6 weeks, we will need to have made some decisions about how our resources will be used, and that includes people. And the challenge for us then is actually not really how we do when things are all hunky-dory and everything's going well, but more how we hold together as God's people when things are tough. So before Christmas, by the end of November, the church council will have made some tough choices, and it is highly probable that they will not please everybody. But actually, the miracle of grace is when we hold together in difficulty, choosing to love each other, choosing to bear with each other, even when there's disagreement. So as a church, we want to make sure that we're a great example to other churches who could learn from us, to those who are perhaps a guest among us. And it's important to remember then that people's impressions of us hold sway for a very long time. Do you know that psychologists and marketing experts tell us that you have made up your mind about somewhere or something or someone within the first 7 seconds of meeting them, on average? You've made up your mind about something, someone, some place, within the first 7 seconds on average. First impressions count for a lot. And Paul remembers then his first impressions of the Thessalonians. And perhaps then we need to ask ourselves, what are the first impressions of this community now? What will the first impressions of this community be in weeks to come? And so in our promises today to this lovely family, actually you and I have made promises too. It's not just all about them and all about baby Iris. Lovely and delightful though she is, I have to say. But actually we've made a promise to be an example to them in our conduct, in our worship, in our devotional life, in our shared life together. We've made a promise. And so how seriously do we take that? And then lastly, you'll be pleased to know, we do have a blueprint for life. We're not just kind of making it up as we go along. There is a pattern that is set and established. Jesus is our ultimate role model. And what we see in the life of Jesus is an example for all of humanity to follow. We see a life, don't we, of selflessness. We see a life where the needs of the vulnerable are put front and center stage. We see an ethic that seeks to elevate the poor and the marginalized. In Jesus, we see the values of the world entirely turned upside down. But it isn't just the social ethic that we see in Jesus and admire. We know his spectacular ministry of works, of power. The hungry are fed miraculously. The sick are healed by the speaking of a word. The storm is stilled. The oppressed are delivered and set free. We see a life that was lived in pursuit of God's will and God's wisdom, seeking always to dovetail his own will with the agenda of that of his Father above. And of course, as Jesus lived life first for the kingdom, he said to his followers, seek first the kingdom of heaven, and then everything else will come into place. My paraphrase. We see a fulfilled life. People flock to him. And people are still captivated by his life and his love even today. Somebody wrote this. Wrote it in the early 1920s. Here is a man who was born in an obscure village, the child of a peasant woman. He grew up in another village. He worked in a carpenter shop until he was 30. Then for 3 years, he was an itinerant teacher. He never owned a home. He never wrote a book. He never held an office. He never had a family. He never went to college. He never put his foot inside a big city. He never traveled 200 miles from the place he was born. He never did one of the things that usually accompany greatness. He had no credentials but himself. While still a young man, the tide of popular opinion turned against him. His friends ran away. One of them denied him. He was turned over to his enemies and went through the mockery of a trial. He was nailed upon a cross between two thieves. While he was dying, his executioners gambled for the only piece of property he had on earth, his coat. When he was dead, he was laid in a borrowed grave through the pity of a friend. Written in the 1920s. 19 long centuries have come and gone, and today he is a centerpiece of the human race and the leader of the column of progress. I am far within the mark when I say that all the armies that ever marched, all the navies that were ever built, all the parliaments that ever sat, and all the kings that ever reigned, put together, have not affected the life of man upon this earth as powerfully as that one solitary life. In Jesus, we find the blueprint for human living. He lived life to the full, living according to the Maker's instructions, and he calls us then to imitate him. Jesus is our pattern for life. He is our great example. Jesus, who laid down his life on the cross and was raised again on Easter Sunday, is the one who calls each and every one of us to follow after him and then to shape our lives around him. And you know, a Jesus-shaped life is a great example to others. a Jesus-shaped church is a great example to others. So who is it then that inspires you? Who is it then that you look up to? Who is your real role model? Who is the guiding star of the choices that you make in your life? Who are you patterning yourself and moulding yourself after? A Christ-shaped life, a Jesus-shaped life, is a great example to others. And a Jesus-shaped church is a great example to others. Shall we stand together?